You found the podcast of the WBFO Press Pass with Buffalo Spree editor Elizabeth Licata. I'm Mark Scott. Unlike the on-air version, which is highly edited to fit within our tight broadcast window during morning edition, here we have more time to talk and occasionally let our hair down. So with that, hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Mark.
The December issue of Buffalo Spree is arriving in subscribers' mailboxes
yes.
as we speak. And just in time for holiday celebrations, it's dubbed the Booze Issue. It's all about local wineries, craft brewers, and distilleries. We've touched on the local craft brewing scene a few times, and we will again in this podcast. But I want to begin with Buffalo-based distillers because of a recent change in the law that paved the way for them.
That's right. There had been, the wineries were all set as of, like, I think, 1976, they could start selling wine, they could have tastings, and that scene really got going. So that law had to be amended so that it would help distilleries and brewers as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, so what are they distilling here in Buffalo?
Everything. There's vodka, there's a coffee liqueur, there's many different types of gin, there's rum, there's whiskey. It started, I think, with just one vodka. I think maybe Lockhouse and Tommy Rotter were among the first two with the vodka and then a gin. And now all of the distillers have so many lines, and I could not name all the distilleries.
Yeah. Are they? I read in the December issue there are six in the city limits.
Yes.
And then more elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. They're all over the place.
Do they mostly use locally sourced ingredients?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. They really try to use local sources. I think that Lockhouse even tries to use locally sourced juniper berries, you know, for their gin. And they try to use locally sourced grains for the vodkas and so on when they can.
Yeah.
And, you know, which it's not always possible.
Well, I've yet to purchase a bottle of a locally produced spirit. How do they rate against some of their nationally distributed competition?
Well, we find that they're winning awards on sort of a national basis, certainly a New York basis. As a taste, I can only tell you what I taste. And not that I've tasted through all of them, but I find that the local, especially the local vodkas, have more character. A lot of vodka drinkers, basically you drink vodka because it has hardly any taste. But these vodkas have taste. That's what they have distinctive sort of profiles, which you don't expect in a vodka. And I don't want to generalize and say that's true of every vodka made by a Western New York distiller, but that's what I'm finding. And they've got barrel-aged gin, which is sort of a new thing. So it gives, you're looking at gin, you expect gin to be clear, but it's not. It's got this sort of light tan color, and it takes on some of the flavors of they age it in, I think, whiskey barrels. So it takes on some of those flavors. So these are very distinctive spirits.
Now, speaking of aging, I read an interesting comment from Frank Weber III, one of the partners in the Buffalo Distilling Company. He said, being so new, they need to get their product out. They don't have the luxury of letting their spirits age too long. Still, many people do enjoy a whiskey, a bourbon, a scotch that's been aged 12 to 18 years.
Sure.
Does that put them at a disadvantage because they can't age their product that long?
Well, if you're talking about clear spirits, there's no problem.
Yeah.
You don't need to age them. And when you're talking about rum, I mean, if you go to any brand, you know, of whiskey or rum, you're going to find ryes that really aren't aged that much and
ryes
that aren't. It depends on the individual. And if there's people who really care strongly about that, then they will go to those spirits. But if there are people who just want to use the spirits in mixed drinks or so, I'm not certain that they wouldn't be just as good. It's with the really aged ones, I mean, I think those are the kinds of spirits that you want to drink all alone.
Yeah, yeah. I want to try. I'm a bourbon drinker from time to time, so I think when I do branch out, because I'm not a gin drinker, I'm not a vodka drinker at all, but bourbon I do taste from time to time, so I'm going to want to try one of the local versions on reading your special old section.
Yes, well, we do have some local whiskeys, and there's actually a Black Button Bourbon Cream. That, I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
I haven't tasted it yet, but I think that would be fabulous.
Yeah.
in coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
I really do. And then I think there's another whiskey from 5 and 20 that's also an award winner. And, you know, I mean, not that when you're faced with the bewildering choice that we have with all the different types of alcohol, it kind of helps to have these awards and so on, so you can gives you something.
Well, you wrote about that relating to local wineries, that the winemakers here do a great job of doing special programs to entice visitors
yes,
to
yes.
their wineries. But I find when I visit a liquor store, I'm overwhelmed by all the wine
yes.
choices. And how do you decide? So what advice do you have?
Well, I go to a good store. I don't want to name names,
yeah.
but you want to go to a good store that has good staff and talk to them. I've met excellent, very knowledgeable staff at almost every wine or liquor store that I've gone to in Western New York. Talk to them. Don't be afraid to talk to them about, tell them what you like and what you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then another way is if they do have the wine advocate and the wine spectator, those are the two that I would recommend paying attention to because they've been around the longest. They're very respected. I would look at those ratings and read those ratings, and I would take that into my decision. I actually have both the Wine Spectator and the Wine Advocate app on my phone, so I can, if I'm in a restaurant, I can. It just, you know, gives you a barometer. But and also, I think some of the smaller stores have people who are really sort of curating their selections, and they personally have chosen every wine. That's not always true at like a big supermarket type store. So a good reason to go into a small store.
And as you mentioned, the local wineries have award-winning wines for sale.
Yes, they do. And what's interesting to me with the whole local wine scene, and it really starts with the innovations of Dr. Constantin Frank, who we wrote about when we did a wine issue a few years back, because he was the first. He came over here from Hungary, and he believed that you could grow vinifera, like Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Riesling, especially grapes, that nobody was growing here because they didn't think they would survive the winters.
Mm-hmm.
And but now we're finding that along Lake Ontario, where the lake mitigates, you know, the climate conditions, that you can grow the at Arrowhead. They're growing Syrah, Freedom Run, wonderful Pinot Noirs. They're doing all kinds of wines that nobody thought, all the great wines of Europe that no one thought that you could grow here. But they're also still using some of the French-American hybrids that people are very comfortable with, and those are, some of them are quite good.
The local craft beer scene is burgeoning. New breweries are opening all the time. The December issue features a roundtable of local brewers weighing in on whether there is room for all of these craft beers. What do they say?
It's kind of, they're qualified. They're not saying, oh, we have room for 500 breweries. They're not saying that. It's not like the old days when you had your brewery and your bar right next to each other and there were a lot, right?
Yeah.
But it's not like that anymore because there's still a lot of competition and people are still buying the mass commercial products, the nationally known products, and so they have to compete with that. So I think what they're saying is we could use more brew pubs, and they're going to be modifying their offerings, but there is definitely room for growth now. Is that growth unlimited? Probably not.
Well, I'm not a big beer drinker, but when I do want to have some beer in case company comes over, I only purchase local now. No more national brands. I think the local product is better quality.
That was probably a big change for you, right?
I don't know. I just extended what I do for restaurants. I mean, I don't go to chains. I go to local restaurants, and now that there's so much craft beer locally that I buy that.
When I was growing up, the only local beer that anyone bought was Jenny.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
probably remember that
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's there is no reason. I've been enjoying a lot of local breweries. They're Southern Tier, which has been around a long time, Flying Bison, Hamburg, Community Beer Works, Big Ditch. They're amazing.
What do they tell you? The brewers are there more people like me who are really now just buying local?
I think that they have really solid fans. In fact, we're going to be running a poll with among local drinkers. It's being made up for me by Ethan Cox from CBW, and it's going to have. We curated it down to 22 local breweries, and there's a lot more, but we just narrowed it down to that, and we're going to ask people to rank them. Okay. And see what happens. And he's already run a similar poll on the Beer Geeks Facebook page, and there are and he's gotten a lot of response, and so we're going to try to redo that in conjunction with this issue. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of response we get. Yeah. But as far as I know, the scene is big, and they're. Yeah.
And as you mentioned, the macro breweries are aggressively marketing. I mean,
oh yes, and they're trying to sound local, and they're threatened,
and they're buying local craft brewers in other cities, and selling that product now as a craft brew, even though it's owned by a major company.
And they're giving, they're introducing products that have more locally brewed sounding names.
So the local brewers have a challenge, but as I read, it seems they're all
confident.
We
were a beer town. Yeah. We were a local beer town before, and we can be a local beer town once again. Mm-hmm. And as we've reported elsewhere in other issues, we have a big movement of growing hops and a local malting business. Mm-hmm. So, as we used to.
Let's move on to the other story in the December issue. You explore downsizing, and we're not talking about companies cutting back.
No.
The focus is on empty nesters who now have too much space and perhaps too much work to do to maintain their property, so they're looking for something smaller. Are they looking for smaller homes, or are they going to condos and apartments and some of the buildings that have been restored?
I think they're doing it all. I know a lot of people who are in apartments. I know people who are in the patio homes. Don't forget that. That's still a very big movement, and those developments continue. And then there are people who just want smaller houses. There are people who have downsized into net zero houses. I know a lot of people who are
what,
just moving.
A net zero house?
Well, it means that it creates its own energy. It's a greenhouse.
Okay.
I guess a better name for it.
Yeah.
So, carbon neutral.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot going on. And then it's interesting about downsizing. For example, there's someone who works with me at Spree who downsized to a patio home, hated it, moved into a bigger house than what she had before. So
really?
It can go the other way. But we featured some really nice examples.
Yeah.
We have a patio home. We have a condo, downtown condo. And they're not named, so that's why I'm telling you, because often people don't say exactly where they are. We have a very small house. It's one of my favorite small houses in the city. We don't have a lot of those, but they're beginning to appear because people are realizing that a space that they thought was not buildable is buildable. If you build a smaller house.
Now, one of the issues homeowners have when deciding to downsize, and it's something my wife and I are concerned about, even though we have no plans to move just yet, and that's, what do we do with our stuff? Our stuff accumulated over 30 years.
There are lots of options now. There are lots of options. All kinds of agencies that will take your things, or online exchanges and giveaways. There's a where you can just give it away to people who might want it, and you have a much bigger reach now. You don't have to have a garage sale. You can just put something on Facebook, or there's groups that you can be in, and you can get rid of all your stuff that way.
Yeah. I was talking with a friend recently. He just moved into a downtown building. And he just loves it. He was raving about it. He doesn't have to worry about shoveling snow. Doesn't have to worry about mowing his lawn. His job is a few blocks down Main Street. It's an easy walk, and if the weather's inclement, hop on the free metro rail. What's not to love, especially with these new condos and apartments being so beautiful with all the latest in modern conveniences?
True. But there's one thing that would be missing for me.
Yeah.
That's I like to walk out of my house and put my feet on the ground and have a garden.
Yeah.
Even though it gets harder and harder every year. Yeah. But yeah, they surround me. As you know, I live downtown too, although not in a small place at all. But I have seen within a block of my house, I've seen like three or four big reuses of historic buildings that have been turned into mixed use with apartments and retail and so on.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask if we're going to have the continued demand, because we're reading now about Women and Children's Hospital, now that it's closed, being converted mostly into residential units. There'll be some retail.
Everybody
and
says
things.
This, and I've given you the same answer every single time. There is definitely the demand, and people want up-to-date, modern apartments in great areas, and that is that Elmwood area, and they're going to get them, and they're going to come, and those apartments are probably going to be all taken before the first unit is even finished. I mean, because that's the way it's happened every time.
Yeah.
Where I am, I can't believe, how's Rocco ever going to fill that space? It was filled before we moved in.
Yeah.
So.
All looking good. I mean, the population isn't increasing,
no.
But are these people coming from the suburbs moving into the city?
Well, they may be people. If there are apartments, there are people who might not be ready to settle down yet. So they might be younger people. But then I've also read, as I'm sure you have too, that when the millennials do decide to settle down, that a lot of them are going for the suburbs. So we may see some movement in the suburbs as well and more developments there. So I think there'll be continue to be activity in both the city and the suburbs. As people leave the city, people will come in. So we're not going to see a population explosion, but we're seeing more in and out, more movement. So yeah. That's what accounts for all this.
Elizabeth, as always, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
Elizabeth Licata is editor of Buffalo Spree. Mark Scott, WBFO News.